Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
COVID-19, coronavirus, the peak, the curve. Oh dear, are you getting fed up with it yet? Welcome to Full Throttle Podcast for Monday the 18th of May 2020. And of course, I joke about it there, but we're just going to have to be patient, aren't we, and see what happens. But in terms of bike racing, we're waiting to see whether we get a season this year. And joining us on this week's show will be World Supersport team boss and former rider himself, Simon Buckmaster, to discuss the financial support that the teams are now receiving from Dorna. That's great news. And the possibilities of racing this year. And as you're about to hear with Simon, it sounds like he's quite optimistic that we're going to get some World Superbike racing this year. On next week's show, we will have Larry Carter, the BSB pit lane reporter, celebrating his 21st season in the paddock. Actually, here's a bit of a secret. Larry's interview was supposed to be included in this week's show, but as he and I ended up talking for well over our set time limit, we had to put him into a special episode for next week. But for now, let's focus on Simon Buckmaster. He's one of the nicest and also one of the most outspoken people, I think it's fair to say, which is great, in the whole of the World Superbike paddock. It's Simon Buckmaster on this week's Full Throttle. First of all then, Simon, what have you been doing the last few months? You've just been lounging around at home like most people have.
No, to be honest with you, like there's myself, the work full-time in the team, there's myself, Sarah Stoppie was our PR and logistics manager, Stuart Millen, my senior technician, and George Buckmaster, he is my son, but he works as a technician in the team. So to be honest, what we've done, we've gone out there, we've prepared extra engines, we've done all the preparation work we can, and we've done things around the work. There's only three people in the workshop, so obviously when I'm there, a lot of times there's only two because I do a lot of the work at home as well. So we've, like, with social distancing, of course, done maintenance work, we've done other things we could that we wouldn't normally have the time to do. Like, we've used our time as well as we can, and to be as well prepared as we can for the restart of the season.
It's a mess though, isn't it, really, quite frankly? I suppose there's no getting away from the fact that the World Superbike Championship, like so many other sports, like so many businesses in general, it's a right mess at the moment. There must be a lot of people potentially losing a lot of money. It's damage limitation, isn't it?
Of course, yeah. That's why we, as a team, Dynabot on our team this year, run by my company, PTR, has been as busy as we can on social media with different features through Facebook, through our Facebook page, through Twitter, through Instagram, and our website, to generate as much interest as we can for the team and all the people involved around the team. I think that's important. But yes, it is a mess. There's no other way to put it, I suppose. But that's why it's really important that that we can run as many races as possible this year, so that we all are doing the job we should do for the people we do it for. That's for our riders, for the people that back our partners, that back our teams. Otherwise, yeah. It could be an even bigger problem in 2021.
But just to help people understand, Simon, and obviously we may have new listeners with us for the first time as well, how would essentially a team like yours make money? How does it actually work? You're going racing, but there's obviously more to it than that, isn't there, with sponsorship and so on. How do you make money in normal circumstances? And then we'll talk about what's happening at the moment.
Make money, that'd be a novel thing.
yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Yeah.
But how team's structured... in previous years, the previous 6 years, we had a title sponsor of CIA Landlord Insurance, as you may remember. And then everything comes to an end. So they had reached its run. But fortunately, a friend of mine called James Nay, who owns a company called Devil Exhaust, actually, and they supply exhaust systems from Thailand, also become the managing director of Dynavolt Thailand. And so he introduced me to the president of Dynavolt, and we got talking. We managed to do a deal for Dynavolt to take over as the title sponsor of the team. Now, in all fairness, as most people will tell you and be aware, the title sponsorship doesn't cover the full budget of the team. So then, not in the case of Ikari, less so, but in the case of our second rider, Patrick Hubblesberg, was a discussion we have, and he brought his sponsors to the team as well. And I know some people call this pay to ride. I hate that. It's not pay to ride. It's like, we have a professional team and other people have professional teams, and then anybody's in the same situation as us now anyway. Yeah. And we work together with the people so that benefit everybody involved. That's the riders and us as a team to work together. So if they come to us and we have a discussion, they've got a company backing them and we can supply the service for that rider and that company. That's how I look at it, people working together. It's not about people paying to ride. So yeah, so all those things come together. And then in conjunction with Dorna, for the races you participate in overseas and for doing all around, Dorna make a contribution back to the team, which people may be not aware of, and that whole thing puts the budget together. It's obviously not getting easier. Well, probably it was getting to a point where it was becoming better after things have recovered from the financial crash way back in 08, but all that took a time to come back. And now this situation in COVID-19 could have will have an adverse effect, and we'll all have to do our budgets tightly and look how we do things, everybody, from Dorna down to us as a team and everybody, to make sure we're all still there in the future and be able to go forward.
Yeah, and there's loads of different opinions, as there always are anyway in bike racing, but it's very, very clear, isn't it, that Dorna are trying extremely hard to get this show on the road, whether it's MotoGP or World Superbikes. Have you had quite regular communication? Obviously, we've got Mark Sarina there, Gregorio Livia. They're trying very hard, aren't they? Do you think we actually are going to get some racing this year, depending on social distancing and all the rest of it?
I mean, I spoke to Mark anyway, because commercially over the start, especially with bringing in a new company like Dynavolt, it's a huge company, and I will do the best they can. And there's maybe other opportunities I've talked to Mark about involving Dynavolt and Dorna for the good of everybody. Obviously benefiting me, benefit them, would benefit everybody. So, and yes, Gregory, I've known him for years anyway, from when he was riding. And I don't talk to him regularly because, of course, he's busy doing the things he needs to do to try and bring this championship, to get it started again. I think they are working very hard. I think it's in everybody's best interest, all our interest, that we race again and do as many races as we can this year. Whilst I appreciate it, some people's concerns, you know, and it is true, and obviously I feel for everybody that's had any losses involved in the virus. Fundamentally, the economy in the world, regardless of motorcycle sport, cannot stand to be stationary as it is at the minute. And we will all have to find a way to get up and get working again and move on. So yes, for the World Championship, World Supersport, World Superbike, MotoGP, Formula One, but for the whole economy anyway. So we're just part of that situation.
I mean, looking at my provisional calendar here, which I'm now already on my ninth different version of this document, which I've been updating through the season in terms of calendars, when we've had updates and changes and cancellations, postponements and all the rest of it. We obviously had Australia at the end of February. There's a huge gap at the moment through to what is at the moment the next round, Donington in early July, but I can't see that happening. You know, what do you think might be a calendar? We've got apparently this double motor GP situation in Jerez, closely followed by a superbike weekend at the beginning of August. How many of these do you think are going to happen? Are we going to go to Argentina? Will we have Misano in November? How much of it do you think is genuine?
Well, obviously, this is, you've just asked me that question. I can only answer that question with a personal view without knowing all the factors. Yeah. My personal view with the factors that I've been informing the people I talk to, and that I would believe that the two MotoGPs would go ahead at Jerez and the World Superbike race. I want to believe that. I like to believe that. But I think that is a credible thing. With that in mind, I think a race in Aragon is very feasible. Portimao, I mean, I've been friends with them since they sponsored my team at the start. And I spoke not so long ago with the CEO of Portimao, Paolo Pinheiro. That track is open for track days and that now, as of last week, I think. I believe Portimao can go ahead. I think the same with Magny-Cours. Yeah, for me, Misano can go ahead. Donington, first week in July, I think no. I happen to know there's another date for that race. Of course, it's our home round, so I'd love to see Donington go ahead. Assen, I don't know. It depends on another waiting date for it because of the difficulties. I think it depends on that government.
Yeah.
Argentina, I know nothing about the COVID-19 situation in Argentina, just from what I've heard and what I think what you yourself have heard. I'd like to say we are going there, but I think it's unlikely.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you on that one. Qatar seems as though it's not going to happen. Obviously, that would have been round two. Germany, we already know, is cancelled. That's not going to happen. In fact, that proposed Jerez date is when Germany would have happened. And Imola, Simon, we know has been cancelled. And I think Dorna couldn't really risk going to Imola later in the year with even more chance of rain, bearing in mind what happened last year. They didn't want that embarrassing situation happening again, I guess.
I don't know if it's that or not. Or, you know, that tracks it works in a park in the middle of the city.
True. Yeah.
So I don't know the reason behind it. It's a shame. That's all I can say. For me, that's just one of those things. That race has gone. The reason why it's gone, I wouldn't know why. It's a shame. It's a shame if we lose that in a classic race. I'm not saying we're going to. I think we'll see a minimum of 5-6 races, which would be half the season.
Anything is a bonus, isn't it, now, after the situation we've had so far?
Yeah, if we can do 6 races, it'd be half the season. I think we would all be, I wouldn't say happy, but satisfied that we've done the best we can and given everybody a return all their input into our championship.
I've heard a few different things. I'll try and just fire a few things at you at random off the top of my head. 2 super sport races per weekend. That's one thing I've heard bandied around. Is that a possibility to make up for the loss of some of these rounds, which we're inevitably going to have, even if we do get a season? Could that happen?
I mean, it's something I'd like to see. It's not something I've heard. It's something I'd like to see. It's something I'd like to have seen anyway. Personally, I'd like to see that we could, I'd rather see us race a sprint race. I would have to say this is a BSB, one of Stuart Higgs' ideas, but I think it works quite well. It's a shorter race, super sport race on Saturday and then the main race on Sunday. I'd like to see that happen. It's not something I've heard. I can't see it, to be honest with you, because obviously, yes, if you say we had 6 races, we had 2 super sport races at each race, we've had the season.
Yeah, we would.
That's fine for super sport, but what about super bike?
Yeah.
So I can't see it. It's something I'd like to see, but I can't see that being the case.
Talking of Superbike, generally, even regardless of the COVID situation, you're not a fan of the 3 races anyway, are you? I think you'd prefer 2 full-length races on a Sunday, wouldn't you? And that's it.
Personally, yes. It's not just from my personal view. Yes, I'd rather see the 2 races on Sunday. It was, maybe that's because I'm old school.
You're definitely old school, Simon. Yeah, we know about that.
Because I'm old. I'd rather see it that way. Or if you want a Saturday race, 1 race on Saturday, 1 race on Sunday. I'm not a fan of the sprint race, no. That, me personally, my point.
Okay, so you're not so bothered about a Saturday race. It's the sprint race, the short sprint race you don't like so much.
I think 3 races in a weekend, every weekend, is a lot. Yeah. And I think even going forward in a situation where we may be looking at restricted budgets, etc., then I think it's a huge strain on the teams.
Well, I mean, you've been, like you just said, you've been around racing a long time and in the paddock a long time. How do you think Dorna's done generally? Because as we've just said, there's some very hardworking, good people at Dorna. They get a lot of criticism at times, but, you know, I've worked for Dorna and I know some of that criticism may be warranted, but a lot of it's unwarranted because they do work very, very hard. How do you feel they've done since they took the reins in 2013?
I've got a lot of time for everybody in Dorna, from all the Yarrocks who we deal with, who you know very well, to Vittorio, everyone that's been there, and a lot of the people I've known for many years, Jim Franco, Coloya, you know, I think, personally, I think they do a good job. I think they obviously have to work within a budget. Everyone has to, I support them. They have my full support, and I think they've done a good job. And anything they need to do for what we need to do to get as many races in as possible this year, I support them in every way, and I will work with them to do that, whether it benefits me personally or not. I understand the biggest picture, and I will work with him in any way I can for us to complete in as many races as we can this year.
Now, one of the jobs they're going to have at the moment, and I believe from talking to a few people over the last few days, actually, is obviously financial support for the teams. And it's something they've made a big deal of in MotoGP, I think about a month or so ago now, maybe a bit more. What about the Superbike situation? I'm hearing now that the teams in Supersport and Superbike are receiving financial support, and that's great news if that's true.
Yes, that is true. It's something Gregorio told me about it, and then this week that's become, there's been an exchange of emails, and that is true. Obviously, I don't need to go into amounts, so I don't think they do for MotoGP. But yes, they're doing the best they can, and they are supporting the teams, and that is a great thing to see. Yeah, and again, thanks to Dorna for that, and as I say, I support them in everything they're trying to do for get this season going.
So if it does get going, we're going to have, what, 6-7 rounds, I guess, and it will be business as usual, apart from the fact, I suppose, Simon, it's all going to be behind closed doors, isn't it? Or is there a chance we're going to get a crowd in at some of these places? We just don't know, do we, really?
We don't know, but I mean, I spoke to Paolo Pinel at the 40-mile track. That race is scheduled for September. He was saying that maybe there wouldn't be a possible spectators at that round. I don't know. All I know is that, again, I'll go racing. We'll do the best job we can in any, and work with Dorna and everybody we can to do the best job we can. And that's it. Obviously, I'd like there to be spectators there, and I fully understand the reasons if there can't be.
Yeah. Now, obviously, if we don't, let's hope this doesn't happen, but if we don't get a world season for all the reasons we've been talking about, social distancing and testing and all the rest of it, could you race in Britain? I mean, obviously, you've been there before. You're a British-based team. Is that a possibility?
If there were no World Supersport races, World Superbike, there were no World Superbike races, World Superbike, yeah. World Superbike. If there were no rounds, or indeed if BSB started up first,
yeah,
I would look to do some wild cards in the British Supersport Champion. I have asked Stuart Higgs about it. And he went, yeah, sure. So, yes, I would consider that. And yes, I have looked into it. Not at the expense of World Supersport, of course. But if that was the only option, yes, I would do it for everybody, in, from the riders to the people that work in my team to our partner, Dynavolt, and everyone involved, yes, for a return on everybody's investment and to put on a show.
And you have to feel that BSB have got a decent chance of running, don't you? The fact that MSV either owns or has the lease on a lot of these British tracks, everyone pretty much is based in the UK. Surely that's going to be a lot easier to get underway, isn't it, in some form or other?
You would think so. But you would think so. But I think the cross-border thing, I don't think, is a huge issue. And Dorna have a lot of influence in Spain as well. It's a Spanish.
Yeah.
But of course, MSV are own... Well, they own four, and the lease on the fifth one, the majority of the circuits. So yeah, you can see on the face of it, yes. And that's why I said if we were in a situation where we couldn't race World Superbike, Superbike, Supersport, and the BSB series was running, then I obviously have to seriously consider, and have seriously considered, doing some of those races for a return on everybody's investment in our team.
Makes perfect sense, I suppose. You're just down the road from Cadwell Park as well, aren't you? So I guess that would be an obvious one to do.
Yeah, that is insane. I'm sure that Patrick Hubblesborough and I think Hikari's always up for anything, but I reckon he'd find Cadwell Park interesting.
To watch Hikari Akubo around Cadwell would be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
He's a good guy there. He's obviously back with you this year. It seems it is a long time since Australia, but how did that go for you guys? You've got Hikari Akubo, Patrick Hubblesborough has come across from the German Championship. Were you happy with that weekend?
From Patrick's side, we always thought how first for you was him to get him in the points. He finished 13th. He was absolutely happy with it. And to be fair, I was. You know, like he just improved all weekend. And probably you'd have to say got as good a result as we could have hoped for, no matter what. From Hikari's side, coming back to the hot, obviously he'd been on the Kawasaki, and I do believe being on the Kawasaki will benefit him in the end for adapting like you have to do on a super sport bike to get the best out and to be one of those winners.
Yeah.
He showed it to the first round. He struggled. We tested, brought him out. He was taking a little while to get into it. The slick tires were a thing that getting that right feel for him. That's always the Japanese way, step by step. Now he got taken out in the race by Gonzalez. That's because we didn't qualify as well. If you don't qualify well, you always run that risk. He would have been top 10. Obviously, we want a lot better for him than that. I'm very happy with Kari back in our team. I'm confident he can challenge at the front. And we, as you say, we worked together for 2 years. It was only that there was. Obviously, ultimately, he has a goal for Superbike, and at that point, Honda had no option that he went to ride the Kawasaki. He's back with us. He's happy he's back with us. I am, and I'm looking forward to this year and 2021 as well with Hikari Akubo.
He's definitely one of the best riders to commentate on. There's no doubt about it, because he's quick, he's exciting, he's always getting sideways. But he's a solid, he's a good guy, isn't he? I mean, he's a good quick racer.
He is. And although his Japanese, his English is getting better and better, he's charismatic. He's charismatic. He doesn't mind singing the paddock show stuff. Like, he's a character.
Yeah, he loves that. Yeah.
And we need characters in our sport.
Yeah, that frustrates me sometimes. And I guess you're the same when people say there's no characters in World Superbike. It's just simply not true, is there? I mean, you know, maybe we need to work harder on bringing that across on the TV. I don't know the way the World Feed's done and us at Eurosport and other people, I don't know. But there are some brilliant characters in the paddock. And we do see that on Michael Hill's paddock show, don't we?
We do. There are some, of course. I think the problem is Not now, because the Scott Redding coming to World Superbike is fantastic because he is the character. But other than that, and Bautista coming across was good, even though his season fell apart last year, but it was good news. And obviously, I'm British, so I'm very partisan, and I love to see British riders doing well. But it isn't good if one nation dominates one championship. That's one problem. And maybe in some cases, some of the top riders have not been so as charismatic as they could have been.
That's one thing, actually. I think that probably Kawasaki and Jonathan Rea got a lot of the stick, and it wasn't their fault, was it? Because, you know, they can't slow down, can they? Domination, I think we all agree, is not good for any championship. But all the other teams have underperformed, haven't they, generally, the last few years, I think it's fair to say. But it does feel like this year, they're getting there. Yamaha, Ducati and others are getting there now.
It's not just that. There is that. I think that the round one in Australia was fantastic racing. And I think it's also like in top rack, that's like Ratzegat, we'll just call him top rack because it's such a hard surname to say.
No, go on, have a go. Let's have a listen.
Ratzegat Lioglu.
That's all right. That sounded good enough.
But when you try and say it fast, it doesn't work out. He's a character.
I know.
He's got a bit of time. Scott's fantastic. Alvaro's got something. So I think that and Ikari Kubra in our class.
Yeah.
You know, last year we saw a bit of needle in our class between Krumanaka and his team. Charles Ron and Charlie Hiscock's best, that, wasn't it?
That was that Misano race in particular was brilliant, wasn't it? Taking lumps out of each other on that last lap.
I'm talking more about the interview he did with him. I think it was in Argentina where he slagged his team.
Oh, the interview, yes. Yeah, but he was convinced he had his engine switched down, turned down, wasn't he, in Argentina?
And you can say, obviously, it's not good to see teams and riders falling out like that. But controversy makes viewing figures. So it's good to see there's some more characters coming through now. And I think the season got stopped, and that's a shame. But when it gets going again, we've got some great characters in there, whether it's behind closed doors or not. Fantastic racing and some good stories behind the scenes.
Yeah, I'm glad you agree with that, because we get a lot of stick sometimes in the media, whether it's in newspapers or magazines or on the TV, of trying to cause trouble. And it really isn't that. The fact is, though, when there is an argument and someone like Krumanaka comes out and says that about his teammate, people love it back at home. You can just see it from the reaction on Twitter. You know, it's not us trying to kick up a storm, is it? I think people just appreciate those who are honest, don't they? And those who speak their mind, I guess.
Well, in that particular case, no one tried to kick that. He just came out. If there's a story to be told, you're going to ask the questions and ask in the right way. Some people have criticized Charlie Hiscock, but I like Charlie. I think he does a good job. And that's what the people want. They don't want to just see, he's a great guy. It was really good to race him. If there is controversy there, it adds to the show.
Yeah, and I think as long as they respect each other on the track, which they all do pretty much, don't they? That's the main thing, isn't it? We don't want anything dangerous happening. It's dangerous enough as it is. Actually, Simon, what about World Supersport? I wanted to talk to you about that because so many people keep banging on about the fact that Supersport's dead and it's got no future. But those races, I've absolutely loved broadcasting those and watching those races. And the series isn't dead, is it? But how do you see it going forward? I guess they're going to have to adapt, aren't they? As long as they're making the bikes and making the parts, we're all right, aren't we? But what's going to happen once they're not anymore?
Yeah, you're right. It's always fantastic racing. And I do think it's more of a British thing to knock it as much as anything else. Obviously, BSB's trying to... the Moto2 BSB, even they can't be bothered with it. No one even knows what's going on. If you look at their championship, it's not in there. So, for instance, but I do think you are going to see new models from manufacturers. I don't want to say any more than that at the minute. I think it's fantastic racing. And to be honest with you, the bigger problem is the Superbike class, because there's more starts in Supersport. It's great. Honda are back. Superb. It's fantastic news. There's more than that. And then you've got the satellite team, Midori Moraki, brilliant. We've got Scott Redding. But we need more private teams. How we achieve that, personally, the only way is to reduce the cost, because it's hard to see now that there's going to be an influx of money coming in with the new situation we're in. But we need more teams. Yeah, Supersport, I think there's things will happen where new bikes will come out, and I think the series is fine. I think it's great racing, as you say, so I don't see a problem. I think it's a British thing, almost a British thing to make out there is a problem. For me, I don't think there is such a big problem.
You think, you were just talking there about private teams. I remember having a good chat with Genesio Bevilacqua about this. Of course, he's won the title with a lot of Ducati support, but he won the title with Carlos Checa in 2011. And he said that. He said this championship needs to be more focused on the actual teams and not so much the manufacturers. Is there a danger then, Simon, do you think, in some ways, when the manufacturers get too much power? You know, are they, can they influence things too much? Is that fair, or am I talking rubbish?
I think, again, if I... It's easier for, in BSB, where Stuart Hicks does a fantastic job, it's easier for him because, and he does do this, and fair play, where he'll go and make a decision.
Yeah.
Obviously, he can take consultation with the other people in MSBR, like Jonathan Palmer, who he's consulting. They make a decision, and that's it.
Yes.
It's harder for that, for Dorna to do that, because, of course, there are no manufacturers in BSB. Yes, you've got what they call works teams, but they're not the manufacturer teams. They're importer teams, and in case, actually, there's only one. And that's thing. So it's easier to make a decision. If you have a, where you're influenced by, you have the support of Kawasaki, if I was doing, I'd say, right, this is what we're going to do. Do you want to race or not? Knowing that Kawasaki would. But that's an interesting gamble for me to take on their behalf, and I'm not the one that's got to do it. I understand the difficulty.
Because I think that Kawasaki team, and it's a phenomenal team, isn't it? They're a higher quality team than a few of them in the MotoGP paddock, I would say, that Provec setup, Gimrodis team. Is it, you also hear them getting criticism sometimes saying they've got all these engineers in the garage, there's people working back in Japan, and they're up against some of these private teams like Go 11 and others up and down the pit lane. It's just not fair. Is that a fair statement? You know, there is obviously a great disparity there, isn't there?
No, I don't think that is a fair statement. I mean, they're the team that are only contracted on World Superbike. Yes, they put all their KHI, put all their resources into that, and we've seen the result with them dominating the World Superbike Championship. But also, Jonathan as a rider has done a fantastic job.
Yeah.
They and Grim Rodas, I know Grim for years, he used to be in Supersport. His team, they've done what you need to do. They've got the support of the manufacturer. They were very well one team. They've got a good rider, and it's all working well together. Obviously, now HRC are coming in with the same sort of effort, though. And I do think, and I thought the Honda was very impressive in the first race, considering.
Yeah.
And Ducati, obviously, last year, Bautista kind of had difficulties in the second half of the year. I think Scott Redding will be very strong. I think Yamaha's coming stronger. Yes, they've been very dominant, but I think we're in for a very exciting time now going forwards. And no, I don't criticise them for being dominant. They just did the job better than the rest of us.
Well, the fact is, when you walk in that garage, and you can see it on the TV, and you can feel it when you walk in, the level of professionalism in that Kawasaki garage is incredible, isn't it? I mean, the way that team is run, the detail involved in every single thing they do, they are, and they have been the last few years, better than everyone else. But it does feel like it's closing up a bit now, doesn't it?
Yes, I think it is. And I can't wait for it all to get started again.
That Honda operation as well is quite similar, isn't it, to Kawasaki, actually, in that you've got a lot of Spanish-based, Barcelona-based people with a Japanese manufacturer behind them. And you do, a few Kawasaki people have hinted already to me as well that we need to watch them because they're going to be a force, aren't they? Certainly 21, you'd imagine. They're going to be a big force.
I think they are. I think, I've said in Australia, I think they did very well. I think the bikes, considering how new it is, for sure they're going to be a force. For sure they are. For sure Ducati are.
Yes.
And I think Yamaha are. I think that's what I'll say. I can't wait to get started. I think it's going to be good. And I think in our time, okay, has been super sport, that is, has been Yamaha dominated in recent years, but mainly because the fastest riders were on those bikes. Even in our turn, I think, again, you'll see things unfold us into next year where, and I think this year, when it's Kai gets back to grips with us, I think, and with Kawasaki Mahias, I think we're going to see some good races. Can't wait.
Because, me neither. Supersport gets the stick sometimes, doesn't it, for being an R6 cup, but isn't surely the nature of the beast that if a new bike comes out and they've made a better bike than everyone else, they're going to be winning. Isn't that, that's pretty normal, isn't it? Why should they get criticised for being so good?
Well, I don't think, all I'll say about that is, as I just said, it's just that there's a perception of that.
Yeah.
And like Jules has rode for me twice over the years, as you know.
Yeah.
And he would say that our bike's still a good bike. And if he was still riding our bike,
yeah,
he would still be challenging for the wins on it. For sure. Carl Smith, when he's rode our bike, he's come back and won at the front on it. Okay, yeah, doesn't have Jules' consistency, but it's not about Mahias. Went from a Yamaha. Okay, he first got on the Kawasaki. Looked a bit average, but end of last year, he's there challenging for the wins on the podium.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about getting the right riders on the bikes, and obviously Yamaha put a really good package together. They had good bonusing schemes for the teams, a point where Honda and Kawasaki were doing less. So everybody was on the Yamahas, but we will see a change of situation. I do believe, I still believe, I'm not saying it's a good buy, yet it's a very good buy. But yeah. I think Honda's done a great job in trying to level things, and I think you will start to see that change, if not this year, next year.
Just before we go, Simon, what should we expect now? Of course, it's all going to depend on social distancing rules. And I suppose it's a shame to say, but the death count and the number of people who are infected and all the other things we've been hearing over the last 2 or 3 months. When should we maybe expect some news now, some definitive news about whether we're going racing or not? Do you know? Are we guessing still? You know, what can you say?
I'd be guessing. All I can say is I want to believe, and I do believe, that we will race at Jerez. And so I'd expect that we would, to actually get confirmation that we need to wait till June.
Yeah.
To actually see the situation as with all our countries ease the lockdown situation to make. I want to believe, and I do believe, we'll race at Jerez.
Okay, so that would be the weekend of the 1st and 2nd of August, wasn't it? So yeah, so just to confirm, how many weeks before that do you think we need to know by, more or less?
Well, I've been making all the preparations, as I said, with the core people that work in my team, as in myself, Sarah Stockwell, Stuart Miller and George Buckmaster. We've made all the preparations. If they told me to go racing next week, we're ready.
All right, perfect. All right, well, we'll stay in touch. Hopefully, fingers crossed. I don't know whether I'll be there or commentating remotely from London, which is quite possible, I think. But maybe see you there, or maybe just see you on the TV.
If I don't see you there, we'll keep in touch and keep the banter going. And I look forward to it.
I've just got to say, by the way, did Charlie Hiscott pay you in those interviews at Magny-Cours last year to mention the fact that he, which isn't true, beat me in the karting the night before?
He didn't pay me. He did. Charlie and I always have a bit of banter going between each other. We say, oh, what should we talk about now? We have a bit of a crack. I can't remember which part of that interview goes on. Just mention the fact that I beat Greg Haynes.
Not even true.
He assures me it is true. And I think...
it's fake news.
If you beat you, just take it on the chin. If you lost, you lost.
I would, Simon. He was destroyed that on that occasion, I'm afraid. And that's why he was so bitter about it.
So it's not true. He didn't beat you?
No, he didn't. No, I beat him. To be fair, he normally beats me, which is why it was such a massive event when I beat him. Ask all the Eurosport people.
No, I'll have to do that. When I get off from you now, I'm going to tweet him and ask him.
All right, and he'll have to listen to the podcast now on Monday to find out what we said about him, which is great.
All right.
Simon, thanks very much, and hopefully we'll see you on the TV, hopefully on that first weekend of August in Jerez.
Thank you. Pleasure to speak to you. Thank you.
Well, that's great to hear, isn't it? Simon, particularly optimistic there that we are going to get some racing in World Superbikes this year. I think we're going to be expecting some announcements from Dorna soon and also from MSV regarding the British Superbike Championship. So stay tuned for all the latest and we'll just have to see what happens, won't we? Larry Carter is on next week's show. Have a listen to this.
The year was 2004. I'd been doing this job for 4 years. In pit lane, and again, I managed to. You've been up and down pit lane nowadays, where it's very, very regulated with the amount of people that are allowed in pit lane. Mm. It's a very dangerous environment when you've got motorbikes and everything else was in past year.
And especially in your case, you've got headphones on as well.
Because you've got your cans on and because you're listening to what's going on, you don't have that perception that there's a motorbike. Just in your vicinity, and I have been clipped a couple of times, foot pegs, you know, ripping trousers and things like that. It's, you know, we've been close on one or two occasions. Well, this particular time was 2004, and it was the latter stages of what we would now call Data Tag Extreme qualifying. Mm. And of course, everybody is out there trying to get out on track and get a quick lap in. And James Ellison, it was, who was riding for the Bernie Tolman Gentin squad, and he was running as a privateer that year when the championship was divided up into what we would call works bikes and cup bikes, and he was running for Bernie Tolman on the Gentin Yamaha, just come back from a couple of seasons in the world championship at James. And it was a few minutes to go, and I was halfway down the pit lane at Donington Park, and I was reporting what was happening, and that James Ellison was just putting a new rear tire in, he was going back out, and Yukio Kageyama just left pit lane, and John Reynolds had just done this, and Jackie Byrne had done that, and everything else. And I was kind of a third of the way across. If you can imagine the pit lane being, the nearest is the pit the pit garage doors, and the furthest across is the pit wall. Well, I was kind of like a third of the way out from the garage doors. And I, you know, I had my wits about me. And just up in the distance, probably around 100 metres away, I could see Ellison just leaving his pit garage. Of course, he was quite keen to get out onto track. And just as James was accelerating away, he was on my trajectory. And the idea is, over the years, is don't try and get out of anybody's way. Just if you move, you're more likely to get hit. If you know, stand, engage a ride with eye contact, and they will miss you. And 999 times out of 100, it works. Except just as James was accelerating away, he happened to look behind him. The sort of thing that you would see when a rider is leaving pit lane, how just for 1 or 2 seconds they just cast their eye back in the direction of the riders on track. But by this time, accelerating away, of course, the 50 or so metres to me had become virtually nothing. Mm. And I'm stood there just waiting for James to cast his eye back in the right direction. And it didn't come in time. And I thought, well, I've got to do a split second decision here. I've got to dive out of the way because at the speed that he was doing, again, I'm not sure what the pit lane speed limit was at the time, but it would be around about maybe 40 or 50 miles an hour. It doesn't sound very much, but I jumped one way, and by which time James had, just to say, started looking to the direction that he intended, but it was too late, and he hit me. And he pulled the brake on a little bit to arrest the speed, but he bundled me base over apex, down pit lane, head, knees, doing a personal impression of an Olympic gymnast, whereas James's had fallen off the bike and the bike had ended up against the pit wall. And James, who was leading the Privateers Championship at the time, was, I seem to recall, laid on the floor as well, which he'd hurt his leg.
What a scene of chaos it must have been.
Yeah, and I remember thinking, I picked myself up, there was no pain. I remember that, there was no pain. Mm. But I was aware that there was a lot of blood about. I'd broken my nose, I'd broken a couple of fingers.
I'd
knocked a tooth out, I'd split my lip, I'd skinned my arms, my elbows, as well as just, you know, the shock of it all. And
that sounds like a terrible accident. That was a really bad one.
It was. I was quite shook up about it. But I said, I'm okay. And I looked at my cans on the floor, and quite simply, Greg, without putting too finer emphasis on it, they saved my life, because my cans had gone down on the side of my head, my temple, effectively. Oof. And the substantial cans that you were wearing at the time, not like the little earphones that you wear now, had effectively taken the impact. They were absolutely smashed to smithereens.
That just proving how dangerous a place the pit lane is. And there's another tremendous anecdote coming up with Larry in next week's show, when his sleepy North Allerton cul-de-sac in North Yorkshire was raided by Eurosport's very own Shaky Byrne at 3 a.m. one year. Absolute carnage by the sounds of it. Greg Haynes here. Thanks for listening. And many thanks also to Simon Buckmaster. Please subscribe if you can. And if you haven't already, to Full Throttle, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on the Eurosport website as well. And please, by all means, get in touch. Greg Haynes TV on Twitter and Eurosport_UK if you have any ideas or people you'd like to hear from in upcoming episodes. We're always very interested to hear your ideas, and of course, hopefully get them into the show if we can. So it's Larry next week. Thanks to Simon this week, and in the meantime, stay safe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.